Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
To another great evening of Spiritual Connections Radio. As you know, we're on every Thursday from 9:30 to 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We will give you a heads up that for Thanksgiving next week, there will be no show and no replay. We're actually going to take the night off and enjoy some time with family, so just a heads up for next week. As always, if you want to find out about this show and other shows, including all the great people who run radio shows during the week, you can go to our website, which is spiritualconnectionsradio.com. With that, I'm going to bring in my host, Pam. Are you there?
I am. Good evening, Mark, and to all of our studio audience and our wonderful host, our listening audience, I should say. There's no studio, mm-hmm. really, because we're all over the place.
Yeah, I'm just going to give a quick shout-out to we just found out yesterday that Sylvia Brown has passed away. I had a chance to see her at a Mind Body Spirit Expo in Edison, New Jersey about a year or two ago with my friend Lisa from Massachusetts. And I had studied one of her books when I first started my journey about 3 or 4 years ago. Did not read a lot of her books, but I had followed a lot of her teaching. And it was actually really funny to see her, you know, in this audience, actually watching her do a live event, and that was about a year ago. And she was absolutely hilarious. I mean, that's the only thing I could ever say about her. I'd watched a lot of her interviews on YouTube, and I always thought that, to be honest with you, that she was a little dry. Always loved her voice. It always sounded like she had just done like a pint of Jack Daniels or something, you know, with the deep voice that she had. But you know, really, I know a lot of people studied under her, and we just found out that she passed away yesterday. So just want to give her a shout-out from the other side. As she would say, the veil between the two areas is very thin. So I'm sure she's probably listening to the show.
Well, yes, love and light to Sylvia Brown. Okay, so are we ready to start?
Yeah, go ahead, Pam.
I'm really looking forward to talking to our guest tonight. Her name is Star Fuentes. I believe that's correct, isn't it? Fuentes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Star is a master intuitive healer, a spiritual teacher, and has been on the leading edge of all things in metaphysics for over 50 years. And there's quite a bit more to this story, and I'm going to let her tell you. So welcome to the show, Star Fuentes.
Thank you for having me. I'm glad to be here today.
It's such a pleasure to have you and to meet you.
Yeah, it's great to have you on, Star. And for people who aren't familiar with Star, we're going to learn so much about her during the show. But she is somebody who has her own radio show on Spiritual Connections Radio. She has her show that is on every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and she's had tons and tons of guests on her show from around the world. So if you haven't had a chance to listen to her show, make sure to get up to the archives and check that out. And thanks for being here, Star, and for doing this interview.
You're welcome. I'm glad to be here.
Wonderful. Well, for those of us who don't know you well, Star, let's start in the beginning. I know you've been, it says you've been working in all things metaphysical for over 50 years. Can you tell us when you started and how you started and why you started?
Well, it's a painful story, but let's start with that. I was very sexually abused by my father, and I was born to a Mexican father and a Polish mother who both spoke alcohol. And I was sexually abused and starved, basically, till I ran away from home when I was 12. And I was full of fear, fear there wasn't going to be enough to eat, fear that somebody was going to hurt me, fear that somebody was going to hurt my little sister. And I was in this tense, I would say, matrix of living in downtown Detroit with all those other energies going on, except for one huge blessing. My grandmother, who lived at the opposite side of Detroit and who was the Polish-type healer and did the Polish stuff. And she sort of started me with us. But I guess my first memory of anything real spiritual, although I didn't recognize that at the time, was my mother and father screaming and yelling at each other. And I was in the bedroom with my sister, and the door was closed, and this red smoke rolled into the room. And I was trying to smell it to see if something was on fire. I did not at that point in time realize that I was seeing their anger. I was seeing the aura of their anger rolling into my room. One of the things that the strong sexual abuse facilitated with me with was leaving my body. As soon as there was an incident, boom, I was off into the astral plane. I was out of my body. So at a very young age, I learned to travel. I think for me, the humbleness of the whole situation, you know, there being alcohol, vodka and tequila, but no food. And the humbleness of seeing other people in their windows eating, seeing different things that I didn't have, made me affirm to myself that I'm going to eat as much as I want one day and that I'm going to do something differently in my life. At that point in time, my saving grace was the local library. It had heat, and of course the librarian was a very smart woman. I was reading way above my years, and of course she gave me books, and almost every day in the summer when there was no school, half of her lunch she couldn't eat. And eventually when I ran away from home when I was 12, a month before I turned 13, she found me a couple to go and stay with. So for me, the metaphysical, the spiritual, started with my personal pain, watching my grandmother, the few occasions that I got to sit with her and watching the neighbors come to her and her help them with teas and help them with advice, when the small amount of time I got to go over there, really inspired me. And I was very, very hurt and very introverted. And I thought that people knew that what I was thinking because I could feel what other people was thinking. And I had a lot of shame. And, you know, I'd have my bangs down to my nose and my books up to my nose and every chakra was covered, you know, even with something on top of my head, so that no energy got out of me, and I was very introverted except for reading. And I read. And to this day, I read about 5 books a week, and I just read all through my life. Well, when I went to live with this couple, I forgot. I forgot that I was sexually abused. I imagined that I left home because my parents were alcoholics. I went into this safe integration zone. And somewhere along the line, I had a meeting with my grandmother, and we were talking about things, and in the sort of the sexual abuse was mentioned. And I kind of just blew it off. And she started showing me some things, and I won a full scholarship to college. And in college, that's when I started reading. I started reading Plato. I started reading Greek. I started reading traditional metaphysics. And something turned on, this fire and this passion. And I had a very hard time with sex, and some guy would put his hand on me, and I'd go, ha, 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 you're kidding. Some guy would ask me out, and I'd go, don't insult me. And I had a very, very, very hard time having any relationships. Of course, my nickname was the Egghead, because that was what we used to call geeks. And I was very smart. Everybody liked me around test time, but very introverted.
Hey, Star.
Yeah?
You know, one of the things I was going to ask you is, did you know, like, from talking to your grandmother, was there a family woman-sized lineage of ability?
My lineage is, on my grandmother's side, it's a skip lineage. And I don't know if you're familiar with that, but a skip lineage kind of goes like this, grandmother to granddaughter. It skips a generation. So my grandmother's grandmother had all the magic. My grandmother's sister had magic too. Intuitive abilities, the ability to look at herbs and make teas from them, the ability to hands-on heal. And from what I understand on my father's side, three or four generations back, I have curandera, which eventually was the path that I chose. So, yes, and I thought she was special. And then one day I had this wake-up. We had a party, and you can imagine back in 1950-something, somebody had cancer who was a college student. And the word cancer, everybody in the room would just be quiet. And we had a party for him, and it was at 7 o'clock, and by 7:45, everybody had left. It was me and him in this room in Ann Arbor, Michigan. I wanted to tell him, you're going to be all right. And I reached over, and he had a tumor on his arm, and I reached over, and I touched him, and the whole world slowed down. Little lines, like lines on graph paper, came into the room, and my voice went into the, like you slowed down a movie. And I touched his tumor when I put my hand on his body, and I looked into my hand, and there was a snot the size of a plum in my hand. Two bright red drops of blood started rolling down his arm, and I looked at the tumor, and I did the most logical thing. I did the most logical thing. I jumped up and down, and I screamed. I threw that tumor up. It hit the ceiling, hit the coffee table, and rolled up underneath a dresser. And I looked at my friend, and he was jumping up and down, and he was white and screaming. And I grabbed my purse, and I ran away from that. And that was like the very, very first significant thing. And I just was in total, total shock. So, of course, I got hold of my grandmother, and she said that her grandmother, that sometimes that happened, that, you know, that she was known in the old country in Poland for touching people and things healing. I pretty much wanted to be a nuclear physicist, and I'm studying all this stuff. And about 4 months later, somebody said to me, there's a lady, and she has a hernia. It's a water hernia, and it's around part of one of the blood vessels in her heart. and she can't get operated on because they're afraid that the blood vessels would break. So she lived in a sorority. And, boy, you know, I was all plugged in about all that kind of prosperity and everything. So finally one of the girls convinced me to go over there. I went over there. And on her windowsill she had, I got to remember this a long time ago, Kellogg's was from Grand Rapids, Michigan, and it was just coming out with little plastic animals and little plastic figures that were horrible plastic that came in the cereal boxes. And she had them all sitting on her little window. We sat down at the table. I recognized them all except a gorilla with chaps. I picked the gorilla with chaps up. I held it out to her, and I said, "What?" And the room slowed down. My voice slowed down. And that little gray, bad plastic toy fell right on her hydro seal, that's what it was called, her hydro seal. And her dress immediately got wet, and the hydro seal went down. And she was just freaked out, and I was just freaked out. It totally drained. And I'm like, oh, my God. And I said, okay, I got to talk to my grandmother, and I have to become a healer. You know, even though I want to be a nuclear physicist, I have to become a healer. When I finished, I think that was another 18 months or so before I finished college, my grandmother had been corresponding with a lady named Maria in Barranquilla, Colombia. And Maria was a healer. And she was the first of 16 indigenous teachers that I went to live with, 13 indigenous teachers for 16 years that I lived with, who brought me back to my light, that helped me heal of my fear. Now, when you go, when you're looking for something to heal your fear of man, and you're looking for something to help you to heal yourself, you don't get to learn that. You get to learn how to heal somebody's liver. You get to learn how to heal somebody's knee. When you go to study with these teachers, they teach you what comes up every day. So, of course, I got 30, 40 things before I found something I could use for myself, and 30, 40 other things before I found something I could use for myself. So in the next years to come, all the teachers I went and studied with taught me exactly what every client, what every person was there for, and I learned all that. And then when I started in the 60s teaching spiritual classes, I started teaching the things that the teachers taught me that other people needed to know. And, of course, the big thing that came up for me was that sexually I was very dysfunctional. I couldn't date. I couldn't talk to a man. And Maria had several talks with me about that. And after doing some research, I spent another year in the United States, and I went to Siliguri, India, where I ended up in a tantric ashram, and I ended up there as a healy, not a person to learn tantra to teach it, but as for the people learning tantra, how to help people like me heal. And I spent 11 months there, and of course, in the end, I learned all of the things about tantra, and I did my sexual healing, which was very powerful. And then by word of mouth, I heard of other teachers. I was intuitively driven to go to other teachers. Subject by subject would come up in my life or would come up with my clients or in my classes that people could not deal with, and I couldn't find very much written about it, you know. And I would end up studying that. So I studied with a lot of different teachers, lived in stick huts, palapas, you know, walked in China with a barefoot doctor. And, you know, China was really interesting because white people don't come in your house and sleep in your house because then all your children die, you know, from 40, 50 years ago. So I slept in a tarp, one of those oil skin tarps, under the eaves of the Chinese houses when I traveled, in no matter what time of year it was. So there was a lot of physical chopped wood, carry water. To me, what was most interesting was to watch my ego go through its different stages. Oh, I've been with two teachers, I know everything. And be with the third teacher and realize you know nothing. Then be with five teachers and think you know everything. And then with the sixth teacher, realize you know nothing. And to watch myself go through those waves of learning till I realized that being a student is about being very humble. Now, I've seen somebody take an eye out of a person's body, put it in a shot glass with tequila, shake it, put it back into the person's eyes, I'm thinking, let's see, there's this vein, there's this artery, there's the connection to the eye, and the person no longer have glaucoma. I have seen things that would, that actually blew my mind hundreds and hundreds of times, and it broke physical plane laws. I have been in positions of panic. You know, somebody come in with a cut 2 feet long and bleeding profusely, and have a healer stop that bleeding. And I have had the experience of my teacher Esperanza sticking my hands through somebody's stomach and pulling my hands out with a tumor in my hand. And, of course, I do the, you know, the normal thing. I stand there paralyzed going, even after 14 years of studying healing. So it's been a long and interesting path. But my pattern was come back to the States and see what was going on. I ended up getting some TM. In fact, I ended up getting close to 62 certifications in the last 50 years. I'm proud to say I am certified in things that no longer exist.
I was going to say, out of those different certifications that you've done, and I assume those are like what we would call different spiritual modalities.
Well, like Silver Mind Control, TM, like Marielle, color healing, dream analysis, enneagrams, you know, auras, chakras, Reiki Master, you know, One Brain. I mean, things that were there along, whenever I came back to the States, I would see ads for people teaching modalities. NLP, you know, and it seemed to me really important to enhance what I learned from the indigenous shamans with modern age psychological and healing tools. It didn't seem right just to be a shaman trained by so many indigenous, whatever, witch doctors and Ibus and whatever, and barefoot doctors. I needed that part that everybody, what everybody was doing in the United States, what was up, I needed those certifications. I needed to have that wisdom because blend of the psychological and the shamanistic is really important in teaching my students and in healing my healees. I think that knowing and having as many tools from as many different aspects of the magical and the psychological world is important.
So out of those different certifications you had, which one did you enjoy the most?
Let me see. I think the one I enjoyed the most was something called popped. It was professional something or other program. And it was a program for spiritual teachers, and it was a year-long program, and we met once a month, and there was a lot of laughter, a lot of lightness, and there was a lot of teaching you how to teach, and I think I took that back in the early 80s in maybe Chicago. And I don't think it exists anymore. But that probably, we laughed, we cried, that was the most. A lot of the certifications end up where it's a serious amount of mental information that you have to digest, comprehend, and remember and give back to the teacher. I like Reiki and experimental and experiential classes a lot. So that answers that question. And then I've given, of course, I've given some certifications and some. I have a class called the Outrageous Mate Magnet Weekend, and it's really outrageous. And that's one of my greatest fun things to teach. Get a bunch of women together laughing, screaming, and crying, and you're going to learn a lot.
Wow.
Interesting.
So tell me about, hey, Pam, did you have a question?
Yeah, I did. I had a question about, and I was just looking through Star's bio because I remember reading something about, here it is. She's the lineage holder in a long line of Mayan healers. And that was fascinating to me. I wanted to ask about that. See if I could get a little more explanation.
Well, at the very end of my travels, I had a significant other, and we had been together 10 years, and one night I was out busy healing somebody else, and he died of a heart attack. And I went into this place where I got cancer. A month later, I had cancer, and I healed myself of cancer, and I went to Mexico, and I've heard of this woman named Esperanza. For years and years and years, I had heard of her. I went to study with her. I studied with her for 3 years. It was my longest path, and I didn't realize or honor the Mexican blood that I had in me as much as I should have, would have, could have, or thought about that. And in the end, when she passed on 15 years ago, she gave the lineage to me to be the lineage holder. There has to be a living person teaching the lineage material. And, of course, my sacred geometry class, Light Language, came from her. The certification I give people, the ministry I give them, for doing laying on of hands and working with cancer is what I learned from her, and about 30 or 40 other classes. So I was the one, she was the lineage holder, and I was the one that she decided on her death that I be the lineage holder for that Mayan lineage. So I have a sheet of paper with everybody's name scrawled on it for the last 20-some generations that she had given me and said, learn these names. And when people graduate from my healing class, they get the list of names with my name on the bottom and then their name underneath that, and they become part of that lineage. And also, unfortunately, when I pass, I have to pick out a lineage holder. And what happened with so many of these countries that I studied in was it was a time and place when all the children left to go to the big cities. You know, by the time I got to Esperanza, everybody in the village who had the talent went to work in a city, was watching TVs, wasn't respectful and kind to their history. They were not teaching their children Spanish because they were ashamed of it. So now around the world, you can study with most teachers in most tribes, and they're willing to accept you on your intensity, your intention, your capacity to do the work. So it is not unusual in this day and age to see many Americans be lineage holders for lineages that came out of India, Africa, Mexico, South America. In fact, I have a friend who's a lineage holder out of Eskimo healing lineage. And that's how that happens. But unfortunately, there's only one lineage holder alive per lineage at a time. So that's a very big honor that was bestowed upon me this lifetime.
Absolutely. So it also says here that you preside over 820 healing ministries worldwide. You teach over... Go ahead.
I do.
So what does that mean exactly, 820 healing ministries? Are these related to the Mayan healing system, or are they something completely different?
They do the Mayan healing system, and in Europe... In many of my countries, many of my graduates of my schools are not allowed to be any other religion. They cannot have a religion or spirituality, so they have to name their church something like shamanistic da-da-da-da-da. And basically, I'm a spiritual, and we work with the energies of healing. So that's as many people who have gone through. Now, some people... They go through the ministry, they go home, and they heal their family and themselves. Other people end up with large centers. I have 27 people in 18 countries that are trained to do the cancer ministry teachings right now. So at 74, I'm sitting back and letting the people who have been with me for 17, 18, 22 years, I'm letting them teach the material that I taught them. And in all, I have about 250 people out there teaching one or another of my classes brought back from one or another of the spiritual teachers that I have been with.
I see. Can I sort of move backwards a little bit in the interview and talk about what you initially said about when you arrived back in the U.S. and you felt like all of these modalities that were being advertised or that caught your attention as time went on were something that you felt would add to your healing abilities that you got from South America and your teachers there? Do you feel like that ultimately was true? And in the reverse of that is, if for example, you could imagine not having done all that, would it have mattered in your work now?
Well, yes. When you're a shaman and you do something and you do exactly what your teacher did, that's just great and wonderful. When you're a spiritual, metaphysical teacher, you have to put it into words. When Esperanza would show me how to heal a headache, she'd show me the physical hand position. She'd do an energy, and I'd mimic the energy, the physical, mental, emotional, how she put the energy through the head. But I didn't have the words for it. Having had NLP, having had many of these other classes, they would take basic movements of energy, put them into words, so I could go, oh, okay, that's what I was doing with that teacher. So I think I could have not reached the level of mastery in teaching if I didn't have the educations and the words to put things in that the shamans and the Biffert Doctor in China, all the things that they did. So, yes, it made a difference. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I have had some classes that are horrific. I mean, it's $500, and on Sunday you're working on the chakras, and it's supposed to be some advanced whatever. And I have had a few indigenous shaman teachers that the moment my light got bigger, better than their own light, they got into competition with me, and they stopped teaching me and did different things. So in both worlds, there were things that took my time, took my energy, that honed my judgment so that I would learn how to discern who to be with and who to take. And I've had classes just, you know, by unknown people in small towns in Four Forks, Iowa, that have blown me out of the water. And it's been amazing, and very humble teachers in a teacher in Korea who doesn't let me talk about anything he taught me, I made that promise, who blew me out of the water, even though I had been seeing all these miracles. So the path has been really interesting, combining the two. And I will tell everybody that you need to use your discernment when you go and say you're going to live with a shaman for 11 months, and you have to use your discernment when you take a spiritual, metaphysical, or healing class here in the United States.
Okay, well, that's a great answer. Let me ask something that comes to the foundation of your belief system about life, I think, and if you don't mind. My personal belief is that before we come here, we write our program. We write out who we want to become during this life and what we'd like to learn. And a lot of that has to do with picking our parents and the original conditions that are molding you at a very young age. Now, you have chosen a very tough path at an early age. Do you believe in any way that experience, that sexual abuse, that neglect has molded you as a healer?
Absolutely. One time I was sitting with Esperanza, and she's just an absolute, you know, miracle worker. And we were sitting there, and I said something about sexual abuse and what my life would have been like without it. And we were sitting there by the side of the river, and I fell asleep. And I was on a porch in Detroit raising my illegitimate child, having worked in the automotive factory for years and years and years. And I got this picture that if I didn't have the sexual abuse, I would have not been motivated to do this. And, you know, we go back to many books on the wounded healer, and many, many suggestions that you're a better healer once you've overcome something in your own life. I believe my soul contract, that I stood up there on the edge of the earth and said, bring it to me, come on. I'm going to be the best healer possible. Just give it to me. And then when I got to earth, I was like, why me? You know, and I teach a comprehensive class on soul contracts, and we talk about what is given. Like, you choose your lineages, your DNA. You can choose you might not have your father may never live with you, but you've chosen that DNA, or your mother might never live with you. You've chosen that DNA to teach you some lessons. You've chosen the type of environment, the lessons that you have. And you have some lessons that are maybe lessons. And if I have time, I'll do this. Some of us have chosen our mates. Some of us have not chosen our mates. And that the soul contract, and if you email me and ask me for the chart, my staff will be happy to send it to you. What's flexible and what's very, very rigid when we come into this planet? You know, and of course, whatever we do can change things, but you really just can't change your DNA, you know? You really just can't change what you agree to do upon this planet. But there are things that are flexible. So, yes, I do believe that our soul fix some things to happen for us to benefit and learn from them.
What was that star that you said we could ask for? It's a chart that tells us about contract negotiations.
I beg your pardon?
You said that we could contact the office and ask for what?
The chart that talks about soul contracts, what you have to keep and what is flexible. You know, what you come in already contract. Like, you and I could be hanging up in the guff or the bardell, wherever you want to call it, where the souls are. And I'd say to you, I go, oh, Mark, are you going to be born on Earth these years? And you say to me, nah. I go, look, you know, Mark, you're very good with marketing and advertising and stuff. Will you be my spirit guide? And we usually choose our spirit guides before we were born. And, of course, like if you're writing a new book or if you have a new challenge in your life, new spirit guides come in. But usually your 4-plus original spirit guides are chosen when you were a soul. And what's really funny is they wear the clothes that they wore in their last incarnation or last lifetime. So, you know, you can see somebody as an Indian or somebody as, you know, whatever.
Let me just do a quick announcement. For everybody that's tuning in now, we are interviewing Star. And, Star, go ahead and give out your website for everybody.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead and give out your website to everybody.
www.starfuentes.com, and that's StarFuentes, and MasterYourLight.com, and about 8 or 9 other websites. But those are the two to go to right now, StarFuentes.com.
Thanks, Star. So everybody, you've been listening to Spiritual Connections Radio. If you want to find out more about this show, and if you want to actually listen to Star's show, she's actually on Wednesdays from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Spiritual Connections Radio. And to find out about all these shows and other people on with their shows, please go to our website at spiritualconnectionsradio.com. So, Star, I think I saw from the notes and everything that you teach over 256 classes. Can you talk about what is your favorite? Well, let's start with different phases of this. What was the first class you taught to a group of students? What is your favorite, and what is your most, what is the most requested class you teach these days as far as what you're doing out at the Dome?
Okay, the first class I ever taught was Hatha Yoga, and I was at University of Michigan, late 50s, early 60s. We had 6 students in the Hatha Yoga class, and I was the only one who had mastered in my freshman year or sophomore year. I was the only one who had mastered the position. So when the teachers left, that was the first class that I taught. My favorite thing to do was called esoteric tutoring. And this is when somebody comes to me and says, Star, I want to learn a little bit about geometry. I want to learn about speaking. They look at my list of 800 classes, and they say, this is what I want. I need this communication class in my life. And then what I do is they come to my dome in Hot Springs, and we work several days together, and I write the material for them. Many people come and say, Star, this is what I believe, this is how I live, this is what I teach, and I help them put their book together. I help them put their class together for them to teach to their students. I believe that the tutoring is great because most of the people I encounter do not move at average class speed. And if you know chakras, if you know subtle bodies, if you know the elements, if you know this magic, I don't automatically include that and waste your time in what we're learning. The hundreds of classes and how did they come to be? Well, I believe that teaching is grad school. whenever I had an issue, big or small, in my life, I would research and write a class on it. Now, in the old days, when you researched a class, you'd get online on the phone and you'd talk to college professors in psychology or researchers, and you'd go to the library and spend hours and hours and hours researching information. When I wanted to learn about chakras, I'm the big visionary. Oh, what color they are, how many flowers the petals had. And I was great with that. When I went to teach chakras, I learned their names in two or three different languages, what their musical note was, what the words are that go with each chakra. So when you learn something, you learn something for how it fits you. When you teach something, you're teaching the engineer, the housewife, you're teaching the beginner and somebody who's been studying this for 30 years. The amount of research, the amount of knowledge that you absorb is monumental, monumental. You know, to teach a two-hour workshop, I will usually read 6 to 10 books, and sometimes as many as 30 or 40 doctoral theses or theses about the particular subject. So whenever something came up in my life, and sometimes it was a student who I couldn't teach them exactly what they wanted to know, or a Shili who had a particular disease that was not necessarily a physical disease but was an energetic disease, I had to do all this research, talk to other people, and that's how, in 50 years of teaching, 800 classes came to be.
What do you think is the biggest lesson you've learned so far as a spiritual teacher?
That sometimes silence is the best answer.
And what would you say is, with the amount of students and everything that you've taught and the different people that are now teachers and writers and everything, what is the thing that you would say is the thing that most surprises you about teaching people?
Is really how much they really, really do know, and that they don't need me to teach them. They need me to confirm things for them. Many, many times people come to me, really good healers, and they're doing stuff, and they're doing a little bit of African stuff. They're doing a little bit of Indonesian stuff, and they just need me to confirm that what they're doing works and put it into words for them. I'm really always surprised how much stuff people know, but they don't know that they know. Does that make any sense?
Yes, it does. I was looking at the different types of services that you provide on your website, and one of the ones at the bottom is something called initiations. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Absolutely. An initiation is the first time, that the initial time, that you have been in that type of energy. For example, many of the Mayan initiations, they have a pulling in energy from a different part of Source or a different part of Earth, or from what I'm thinking of is one of the greatest initiations is called the Goth, which we just talked about, is the space between the time you left the place where the souls are and in the place where you stepped into your mommy's body. Because you float around your mother's body, you decide whether this is the right appropriate parents for you. And there's an initiation of re-experiencing that. So over the years, I think probably if I've had about 60, 70 initiations, different teachers have done for me and talked me through them. And I do different initiations upon request. People say I'm really into the Mayan or really into the Egyptian. And what I've learned along the way, I initiate them into. And sometimes it's just the healing technique. I mean, I had a healing technique I learned back in 72, and just recently the first person I met that matched that healing technique came into my life this summer, and that was the first time I taught that healing technique after learning it in 1972. So sometimes certain people resonate with things, and for me to be able to, I'm a big visionary, see someone, see what they resonate, and go, oh, this is in my toolbox, and I will give them their initial experience of that energy. And it's fun, and people have all sorts of things happen to them during the initiation, and, you know, they go out, their life changes, or they go out, you know, and
Thank
their
you.
Life moves.
Pam, do you have any closing questions?
Oh, I still have lots of questions.
Yeah, I know. We're done in 9 minutes, so go ahead.
I know. We're running out of time, I know. The question that I had, I guess, that holds the most weight in my consciousness is this idea of do you always match the person's energy with whatever it is that you teach? Do you have a favorite healing technique, or do you teach the healing technique based on what you read as the person's energy?
I teach what they came for. If you come for a specific technique, I teach what you came for. In a healing situation, I heal what is appropriate for that specific energy. I don't say I like DI the best, divine intervention the best, I'm going to do divine intervention on all my clients. And many, many times people come to me and say, Star, I want to lose 100 pounds. And I say to them, great, we're going to work on your sexual abuse first. Or great, we're going to work on your mother issues first. And sometimes people get what they need, not what they want. But if you're here and you're paying for and signed up for a certain technique, that is exactly what I'm going to teach you. But I'm going to say to you, hey, you know, one brain really matches you. Or educational kinesiology really matches you. Look into that, or can we work it out for me to teach that to you at a future time?
I see. Well, that's lovely. It's a good answer. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Mark, do you have anything else, or can I keep going?
Why don't you go ahead and finish off the questions? I was just going to ask her, you know, how would someone learn about going to train with her? What's her next event that's coming up? But we can do that in the closing. But go ahead.
Well, no, that's okay. Why don't we cover it now to make sure we get through it all?
Okay, Star.
Okay.
So let's just say my friend just started his spiritual path and he wants to learn how he can train with you. What would that look like?
What that would look like is I would give them some particular tasks to do. I would do a phone call, I would talk to them, and I would give them some tasks to do. Many people want to work on their spiritual path. If you cannot complete the tasks that I ask you to do, then you're not going to come here and work. So you go through a little bit of back and forth with me. For example, right now I have a 29-year-old actress from L.A. with me, and she basically called me up and said, I want to be your student. I said, here are 4 tasks, do them. She did them. I looked at them. She's now living in Hot Springs, and she's working with me. So get in touch with me. One of the things I like about me is you can talk to me. I'm not someone who you have to go through 43 secretaries and stuff most of the time, unless I'm on another appointment. You know, my secretaries will say, here, talk to Star, and I will talk to you, connect with you. So you have to have some interaction and some exchange with me to see if working together would be both beneficial to you and to me. Things going on. I have a Christmas party on December 14th, And we usually have 200 to 300 people come, and people do readings and healings, and we got gifts for everybody and food. And the day after Christmas, I teach one high magic class a year. And I will be teaching Hermetic Magic the day after the Christmas party. I have, I think I have 5 or 6 people coming between now and January 18th for esoteric tutoring. On the 18th, I will be teaching something called Catalan Solids, which is a part of sacred geometry. On the 19th, I will be having a huge birthday party. I will be 75 years old.
Oh, happy birthday.
Well, in January.
Happy birthday.
You know, and it's like, I've got to be really honest with you. I don't know what happened to all the years. You know, I've been content. I've been learning. I've been creative. I've been curious. I've been disappointed. I love my husband dearly. I have been sad. And it has been such a great ride. Life has been so wonderful. And if I think back about college, I think like I was just there. Or if I think about Esperanza living in Mexico, I was just there. And I want to encourage all of you that the more light that you use, the more light that you share, in any way you do that, the more vital, the more younger you are, no matter what physical age you are. And that's important to remember.
Well, thanks a lot for being on the show. And as always, Pam, it's great to have you on. And,
thank you, Mark. It
Star's
was great.
Thank you. So Star's website is StarRFuentes.com. And you can find her link on our Spiritual Connections website, which is spiritualconnectionswithanSradio.com.
Thank you both of you for having me. It's been wonderful.
There's always so much you could talk about. I'm sure we could go for another 2 hours.
Well, you know, if you have several years, we can talk, you know?
Right. Well, thank you, and I want to say goodnight to you and to our audience. Goodnight, everybody.
Night.
Goodnight.
Life is but a dream.